So this week, we don't really have much to talk about, or at least we didn't have any really big hot topic this week because it was just a really slow week. I mean, there was usually every week we at least have one thing that's just like the standout piece of notable news, and we just didn't have it this week, did we?
No. With that being said, if you guys have questions, we'll find some time to maybe answer them at the end of the show once we run down what we have them topics.
Oh yeah. Yeah, for sure. People who are dedicated listeners to the live stream, be sure to head over to youtube.com/9to5Google. You'll find our live stream there and chat box. I don't think we have super chats, but you can just do regular old free chats. And just let us know if you have any questions. Like Andrew said, we'd love to spend a little time this week over the course of the next hour just answering any questions that you may have about any of the topics we talk about, or really anything. If you have any, we had a hard time coming with interesting ideas for the show this week. So if you have anything that you think is interesting that you think we'd be able to shed some light on or offer our opinions on, then feel free to do that. Before we do that, though, I guess we'll get to Google Glass later. I feel like that's like we ran out of topics, so it's like Abner and I just default to talking about AR or some kind of
basically life story.
So we'll get to that later. But first, we want to talk a little bit about Google Assistant and some updates that rolled out this week. I guess one of the more interesting things that happened this week was today, which was Google Duplex, which is kind of sort of Google Assistant related. Is now rolling out to like 43 states, right?
Yeah, it's and those seven states are probably for regions, cities, states where there's some privacy requirements. Like I believe Chicago, Illinois has a rather strict privacy requirements there. For example, Google can't run Google Photos face recognition. So that's probably why those seven states are included. But everywhere else, this is a pretty wide rollout that began with the original five cities when Google originally announced Duplex and on the Pixel 3. So,
wait, this is news to me. Hold up, back up. Google Photos face recognition
in Illinois
has geographic limitations.
Yes, because Illinois has one of the toughest data privacy laws. Biometric data privacy laws.
So if your home address or your Google account address is Illinois, you literally cannot use the face recognition feature in Google Photos. Is that
the case? Yes, I will.
You can't even like opt in or anything.
I do not think so.
I mean, not to put you on the spot, because you know, I know you, I don't want you to have to take the time to look all this up, but this is interesting and this is completely news to me, and it's actually a pretty good example of a reason why. I was actually thinking myself, why would Duplex be limited, and what do these seven states have in common that, you know, it's very common for something to roll out to the continental 48 mm-hmm. and leave out Hawaii and Alaska, but obviously for different reasons.
Yeah, so
that's interesting.
Like another example is, remember how Google Arts and Culture had that popular art selfie thing?
Mm-hmm.
That was not allowed in like Texas and Illinois due to similar laws. It's some states have stricter privacy legislation, and that's why I guess some people want a more national laws so that it can be a more consistent experience.
I had no idea that this was a thing, if it is a thing, because I mean, that's a huge number of people that can't use one of the very core features of Google Photos, which is a pretty big deal if that's true. Anyways, let's move on.
Yeah.
Google Duplex, 43 states. That's a big deal. And it's also more than that. Just it's going to be rolling out beyond just Pixel 3, which is the only device you've been able to use it on as of or up to now.
Yeah. The reason that it's part of Assistant is to like give that wide user adoption in Google Assistant for Android, obviously, but Google Assistant for iOS. Duplex is a part of Assistant because Google wants this technology out there compared to the other more features that they want to keep exclusive for the Pixel devices, like maybe call screen. Who knows whether that will ever come to other devices, but in the case of Duplex and Assistant, I think this is something that that can be used by more people, and for Google, it really shuts down the naysayers who claim that Duplex isn't real at the beginning.
Yeah, so what does this practically mean for people that live in one of these 43 of 50 states? Basically, it means, I mean, as you mentioned, it's tied into the assistant, so it means that people will be able to book reservations by saying, you know, hot word, book my reservation at so-and-so restaurant, and then Duplex will make the call for them and set all that up.
Yeah. It's, again, like that Google Assistant for iOS is a key app, an interesting way to get iOS users better a voice assistant.
Yeah, I think that, is that the only thing that it can do right now is book tables for you at restaurants?
For the moment, yes.
As of today?
Google, the other example that Google touted was hair salons, that kind of thing, but
yeah,
it makes more sense at restaurants because restaurants are more likely to have a business profile, Google My Business account, which allows them to handle recommendations. The infrastructure is more set up for restaurants. Every restaurant can take reservations via Yelp or something, and Google wants to push reserve at Google in Google Maps and Google Search. So yeah, it's still restaurants, which I think is one of the better things. It's annoying if Google gets it wrong, but in the grand scheme, it's a low risk. Google fails to do it, it's not a catastrophe. It's not like calling your doctor to make an appointment.
Right. Yeah, and I think restaurants also have more room for the feature to naturally expand over time. I mean, right now they're doing booking tables, but there's tons of things that AI could theoretically do for you calling a restaurant. I mean, the other obvious example would be telling Google, you know, hot word, order me the usual from whatever restaurant, and they could call and make it like a takeout order too. You know, like that's something that they could do. Or
I would like that.
You know, there's like variations of that too. You know, you could have like, you know, call in a takeout order, call in, you know, a delivery order. You know, like there's like I think there's lots of different things that they could do. You could, you know, you could say call and ask how busy the restaurant is. You know, like I just think restaurants are like an obvious like place where Google can really expand on this idea beyond just booking tables. And so, yeah, I'm excited to see how this evolves. But for now, it seems like a really niche use case. I mean, speaking personally, I don't know how many times I've ever booked a table in advance at a restaurant in my life.
Same.
Like maybe less than five, I think, for me personally. What about you?
I'm more on the paranoid front where I want to make sure it gets it correctly, so I would do it myself.
Oh, yeah.
Either by calling or using an app. I think some people would want that direct confirmation. But if you just need Google Assistant to work, you just need Duplex to work once before you can start leaning on it and it becomes a convenience that you want to keep relying on.
Sure, one way they could probably fix that or you know, add a feature. One thing they could do is they could add, you know, basically this call screen thing that we discovered recently, relatively recently, that you can just watch the conversation going on in real time on your phone. The thing we discovered recently was the
audio
thing. Yeah, from day one. That's right. That's what I meant. From day one, you could actually read the transcript of the conversation. And so with Google Duo, if you could do that, and that would be, you know, that would probably solve that problem of like worry that that Google Duplex, not Duo, Duplex is, you know, making a bad or messing up, because you could at least, if you see that it messes up, then you at least have a backup plan, you know?
Yeah.
I don't know. It's one thing they could do that they're not doing yet, I don't think. Are they?
No, they're not.
I mean, I haven't had a chance yet to personally use Duplex, and I don't know. Is my state one of the seven that
you should have it? It's Austin. You're close enough to all the hipsters in Austin where I'm sure Google would want you.
Did they release a list of this of the states available in the US? Yeah. It's actually not available in Texas yet. That's one of the seven. So I'm completely out of the loop on, even though Google's going to have basically their HQ2 in Austin.
I guess the other thing is the consent laws, you have to disclose that you're making a call, that you're recording a conversation.
That's
probably the thing that's more applicable to this.
For sure.
Yeah.
For sure. Yeah, that's probably I would guess that that's the only thing that's affecting this is the recording disclosure laws. Yep. And I do know that in Texas it's a both party state. Is that what they call it? I don't know. I think it's where for it to be legal, both parties have to be aware and both have to agree.
Yeah.
Both have to give consent. And I think that some states it's like single party consent, so it's like it basically is free for all.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that's interesting. I mean, I'm excited for it to eventually come to Texas and me be able to use it, hopefully before Google's new campus opens up in Austin in a couple of years.
Maybe when we're in Mountain View or San Francisco, the upcoming weeks, we should give it a try. We will demo 95 Google team.
Yeah, that's actually a good idea. We'll try and do that and see if it works. I'd love to do a video about it. But yeah, what else is there for Assistant this week besides that?
So on Assistant, this is at CES, Google announced, well, it goes back to the Pixel 3 and how you can no longer use voice match to completely unlock your device. In the past, once you give like a hot word command, your phone would recognize your voice and then automatically unlock it. Your voice acts as your password, essentially. And after you finish your command, you could just jump straight into the phone, continue using it. But with the Pixel 3, Google disabled that and replaced it with your voice only gives you access to Assistant. You can only go as far as the lock screen when you're using your voice match to interact with the device. At CES, Google announced that this is coming to all Android phones because voice match is not a very secure form of authentication. So the benefit is security, but downside is that it's quite annoying, frankly. When you want to say hot word, play such and such a song in Spotify, you have to now unlock your phone. You have to either enter your passcode or tap your finger to the fingerprint sensor. The obvious downside of that is it really neuters the effectiveness of hands-free commands, the give and take. A lot of people,
So didn't Google remove the face unlock smart lock feature from Pixel 3 as well when it launched?
Yes, they did.
And so this is the second example of them ditching a prior, you know, stock Android security feature because they've deemed that it's just not secure enough.
Yeah.
And I don't know how I feel about this because there's still the option to just not have any security at all. That's an option. You can just have no password or no passcode for your phone.
That would disable things like Google Pay, though, which I assume most people use. Right.
True. But I guess what I'm saying is I kind of like...
You want people...
I don't know. I can see both sides of the argument where it's like, you know, it makes sense from, you know, their point of view to not have consumers who don't know that they're making their phone extremely vulnerable by not using these features or by using these features. And, you know, on the other hand, I feel like some users, I mean, us included, are definitely well aware enough to be, you know, we know very well that we're, you know, potentially, if someone wants to hold our phone to us and hold us hostage and force us to speak our, you know, hot word, then they're going to get in. And it's like, we're willing to take that risk, you know?
Oh, I've actually,
I don't know. I just like that. I've liked that you've been able to choose the lower security options. And, you know, like you said, this is a particularly inconvenient one because it made using Assistant really easy.
Yeah. That's an interesting scenario. Have somebody holding your phone up.
Say it.
My belief is I've actually thought about this problem in a low-key kind of way, since we have time to kill on this podcast. You should be able to designate like a kill phrase to your phone. Like if you're given a pass, if you have to say a pass
safe word.
Yeah, basically. If when you're under the US, you can give a command and it kills your phone. I don't know. or more practically, if you enter a specific long passcode, it disables your entire phone, it starts a wipe process or whatever. I don't know, it's a very spy-ish way to cleverly do security features. I'm being paranoid, of course. But
yeah, I don't know if I mentioned this on the podcast before, but my brother actually, he's like, you know, he just uses an iPhone because he doesn't really care. But one of the things he does is like, he's trying to avoid smartphone addiction. He's like avoiding screen time basically as much as he can. And what he does on his iPhone is he sets the password to like, 50 character.
Ooh.
Like, you know, on iOS it lets you just set like, you know, whatever long password you want. And yeah, he sets like a 50 character password, so if he ever like wants to get into his phone, he has to like sit there for like a solid 30 seconds
and type it out. That is a clever.
And on top of that, you have to type it out without making a mistake. And so you mess up, you gotta like, you know, do it all over again. But yeah, it keeps him from using his phone unless absolutely necessary. And that's his screen time feature, basically.
Oh, that's a brilliant strategy.
That's what made me think of when you were talking about that. That is a good idea, I think, that if you had some long phrase like, I don't know, self-destruct this phone right now, Pixel 3 exclamation point or something, you know. Or even better, some kind of voice phrase. That'd be great.
Yeah.
That's a good idea. That's actually a good idea. Because I've thought about that problem too, you know, like with, you know, law enforcement, like holding you down and forcing you to put your thumb on this fingerprint sensor, or in the case of the iPhone, you know, holding it in front of your face and telling you to make eye contact, or, you know, whatever.
You wink, you make a winking gesture at your phone. And that's...
Yeah, with Face ID, as long as you keep your eyes closed, you're good, because it requires, or you can, the setting by default requires attention, so just close your eyes as hard as you can, don't open them.
Yeah.
But yeah, that'd be cool if there was like some kind of kill switch. Yeah, I mean, there is a kill switch in iOS with you know, failed attempts.
So yeah.
After a certain number of failed attempts, does Android do that too? I think that, I know that it causes the delay just like iOS does, where it's like after 5 failed attempts, it makes you wait like a minute or whatever. I don't know if they have it where you can turn on the setting, on iOS at least, you can turn on the setting to wipe after 10 failed attempts or something like that. It just...
I don't think so.
Just wipes it. Huh. I don't think that's on Android either. But it's a handy little feature. Yeah. So what else do we have?
So
this week?
Rounding out this stuff is support for smart heaters, air fresheners, and fireplaces as more smart devices get built. That fire assistant support for fireplaces is an interesting one, which I have never thought of the fireplace as a smart device. But hey, everything is getting smart these days.
Yeah, there's actually a lot of crazy devices on this list that don't exist at all, or at least they exist. Smart, obviously, fireplaces exist, but smart versions of these devices don't exist. Smart kettle, like one of the types is kettle, like specifically.
I'm actually looking for one right now.
You're looking for a smart
kettle. Yeah, automate my hot water routine in the morning. I felt very guilty and lazy searching that this morning. Smart kettle. I'm there for this.
Some of these do exist. Smart sprinklers exist. Smart fridges. Smart lights, obviously. Smart fans. Smart dryers and washers and dishwashers. vacuums. I guess that's like
Roombas.
You know, Roombas are that whole category. I don't know how many of these devices actually... Now, the next layer of this is how many of these devices are smart and also already have assistant support, which is a much smaller number. I don't know if there's any smart vacuums that have assistant as of right now. Maybe there are.
Maybe not direct assistant, but you can give commands.
For sure, yeah. Through if this, then that, or something like that. But yeah, that's interesting. I mean... you know, just an ever-growing list. I mean, eventually this list is going to have everything that you
everything
have in your
smart.
Home.
Yeah.
You know? So it'll be an interesting list to watch evolve. The addition of a fireplace is probably not as crazy as some things we'll see in the future.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, to round the last thing on this month is last Friday, we in our Google app APK Insight, we spotted something assistant for ambient displays, which is just at MWC last week, we saw assistant buttons, but Google might be planning to put assistant light on the ambience on the ambient display, which every single phone today has. So it's a pretty logical choice to have assistant always maybe providing you directions and whatnot. It's hopefully they do this. That's our best guess for what it is right now. The other possibility that just the Pixel stand, more features for that, or if other OEMs ever decide to make their Pixel stand, own Pixel stands, Dreamliners, that kind of stuff, that's sort of the possibility. But ambient displays, systems with ambient displays, that should be a thing.
Yeah, and we've talked about this many times on the show, I think, but man, that just gets really annoying with the security aspect. Like, there's so many things with the Google Assistant that you can't do unless it knows that you're, you know, you,
yeah.
Which is in current form, you know, entering your passcode or putting your fingerprint on there or whatever. And so it's true. It's also, that's also true with the ambient display, assumably. You know, it's like,
what can you put on there? It's
right. Exactly. The amount of things that you can do on that are just like, I mean, you can set alarms and ask for the weather and, you know, it's like the number of use cases are extremely limited whenever you don't have that authentication.
I'm sure there's a balance right there. But I would, again, like, we touched on this earlier, but maybe users should have the ability to lessen their security for convenience. That's a discussion worth having, probably.
I feel like Assistant on phones should just be opened up completely and just treated like as if it was a Google Home.
Hmm.
I mean,
personal results. That's, yeah. Oh, maybe.
I don't know.
Yeah, it's a odd one.
I don't know. I'm sure there's many reasons why they aren't doing that, but
it's a challenge.
I don't know. Yeah. On Google Pixel front this week, there was a, you know, the March security patch, which is usually pretty much just a security patch, but this month brought what seemed to be some pretty notable updates, one of which I've seen complaints about a lot. And that is the camera on the Pixel 3 kind of having lag problems. I know our Seth had that problem. I think Ben also, maybe. I saw it on Twitter. I've seen it on Twitter like a dozen times in the last few months of just the camera not opening quickly. And honestly, if we go back to day one of Pixel, like, that was one of the things that I think stood out about the Pixel compared to previous Nexus devices and pretty much every other Android phone on the market. With the original Pixel at the time, it was pretty much unrivaled in terms of snappiness of launching the camera and taking a photo, except for the iPhone. The original Pixel matched the iPhone in terms of camera app performance, in my opinion, and it has been kind of felt like it's like slipped a little bit every year since then, and this year it got really bad where it's like these flagship Pixel 3s for some reason are not able to open up the camera app without stuttering for 10 seconds. I don't know, and I honestly haven't experienced this problem firsthand, but it's been widespread, and I don't have any way to report whether or not this security patch actually fixed this problem.
Yeah. The early reports that I've been seeing is it fixes the camera, but some people are still seeing general phone lag, which is, it's baffling. That's always been an issue. The Pixel 2 famously had that issue. Late last year. So it's, some people have this issue, others don't. Maybe it's because we're in a tech circle, we're getting way more reports of it, but it's, I am very curious what Google thinks is at issue, is at fault here. If it's going between generations, it has to be software, doesn't it? It can't be a continued hardware flaw that they can't root out over generations. So, and this, I'm very curious to know what's happening at this point. Generation after generation.
We did get one tip that said something about the RAM management was actually a hardware problem with the Pixel 3, but we don't have confirmation on that, and we don't really know. But that would be interesting if that's the case, and they're just kind of just trying to ignore the issue until the Pixel 4, basically. That no one's really dug deep enough to really figure out exactly why the Pixel 3 has been struggling so much versus the Pixel 2. And what has really changed, like on a deep technical level with RAM management and performance. There's only so far you can dig in terms of figuring out why and how it's not performing as well as last year, or even the original Google Pixel, in my opinion. But it would be really interesting if it was like a horrific scandal of like a hardware flaw that would definitely warrant recalls. And just people haven't figured it out yet. And they're just going to like play dumb until, I don't know, maybe that's actually a problem. And Google's just going to play dumb and no one will ever figure it out. And the Pixel 3 will just go down as having this flaw, and that's fine. Pixel 2 is kind of a similar situation where it's like they for a little while with the screen, they kind of tried to pretend like there was nothing wrong. At least that's what it seemed like to me. Like, they launched the phone, there was no talk about the flaws or the camera or the display having any quality problems at all, at least from Google, obviously. I mean, no company wants to, you know, publicize the fact that their products have issues. But, you know, it was blatantly obvious that it had issues. And, you know, even after the public outcry, the way they handled it was, like, to skirt around it as much as possible to... It's like... With every new problem that was raised, they just tried to... I mean, they addressed like the software things because those can and easily be addressed. But all of the hardware problems, which were like, you know, the blue tint stuff and, you know, I forgot at this point. Thank goodness I forgot.
Burn in.
I feel like all these things, they kind of just tried to skate by and just like, you know... Just try to do as much damage control as possible in the press and then just like say, yeah, we'll make it better next year, which that's what they did. But what if it'd be really interesting if that's kind of what happened with the Pixel 3's RAM management stuff. I don't know. All speculation, but wouldn't be surprised because Google has not, their hardware has not been flawless. Just leave it at that.
Yes. Oh, a minor Google Pixel 3 related feature, I guess, is Gmail Smart Compose, which is the ability for, as you compose your message, Gmail automatically suggests what to fill out next based on prior context and your writing habits. It's now available on other Google devices, on all Android devices, actually. Rolling out to more devices beyond the original exclusive period that Google announced in October, was it? Yeah, I've grown to use this feature more and more. My favorite little feature is when you're starting out an email, instead of, you know, it's Google Smart Compose is pretty good at typing at filling in the name for you. It's the little things and it's pretty great.
Do you use it a lot? I use it on desktop mostly. I don't really use it on mobile for whatever reason. I think the reason is because I'm never really writing emails on mobile, not longer ones. And so I use it on desktop all the time.
Same. But mostly desktop usage, Smart Compose, which is fitting. But yeah. That's...
I wonder now, every time I receive an email, I wonder how much of every email is not written by that actual person. It's kind of like it's kind of like having a ghostwriter. You know, it's like they get to the same point that you intend, but you know, it's not actually your own words. It's just you're approving the words that someone else wrote. It's interesting. I mean, are we going to get to a point where everything is ghostwritten? Like, you know, AI is like, if I were to write an article about some news story about Pixel 3 or something, is it just going to write it for me? And it's like everything is just going to be ghostwritten at some point, and everyone will have perfect grammar because AI is just doing everyone's writing for everything, and everyone just basically says, yep, that's what I was thinking. And then those approvals or denials about whether or not that's what they're thinking is only going to further train the AI and machine learning models. So
I
could just imagine this dystopia where nothing is actually written by humans anymore because they're too good at predicting what we think.
I guess the human analog is that, you know, probably in like corporate, when you're that high up, you're not really doing anything. You have your assistant there for you. You have a team under you to do your correspondence, to plan your meetings. So maybe this is just bringing that to everybody in the world.
Democratizing corporate powers, I guess. I don't know what to call it. But yeah, democratizing that power to have like a secretary, basically.
Yeah, basically.
It's an interesting way to look at it, I guess.
There's a human analog, and I mean, it's called Google Assistant, so yeah. I guess that is the end goal. They're very blatant at what they want technology to eventually do for you.
For sure. Well,
so the next topic is our personal, personal life, or at least your lifelong beat, so to speak.
Lifelong, I wouldn't go that far. Half decade long.
No, you'll get there.
I've been covering glass since 2014, for those that don't know. 2014. That's actually how I ended up doing what I do now, is I had scoops related to glass, and that was just because I actually, funny story, I didn't actually have glass for the first like year that I was covering it. Like, I was covering it, and I was probably covering it more like in depth than pretty much anyone, and I didn't even own a pair. I had lots of friends that had pairs, and anyways, that whole legacy, I guess you could call it, and continued this week after. I mean, it seems like at this point I kind of go 6 months between glass stories, you know. It's like when I first started here, it was like I would go 6 hours between glass stories. And then it slowly went to like 6 days between glass stories. And then I eventually got to 6 weeks between glass stories. And then, you know, we've gotten to the point where it's like 6 months. And the next, I guess the next step on the logarithmic scale or whatever is I'm going to be doing a story every 6 years. but yeah, this week, the story was Google Glass Enterprise Edition. Second edition. So Google Glass Enterprise second edition, I guess, is what we call it. Google Glass E2E, maybe, or EE2. But yeah, it's a device we already known about. I heard about it first last fall, like I think November or something, and was told basically this exists. It's a minor spec revision of the original Enterprise Edition. For those that don't know, the original Enterprise Edition and the Explorer Edition both had some serious problems with overheating in the enterprise. So like clients and these companies that were both selling these solutions, these glass enabled solutions, and also their clients, both had significant problems with batteries basically melting all the time. Because, you know, if you think about it, a lot of the time these devices were being used in very hot and humid warehouse, you know, situations. And so it's like, they would just fall apart. They were just not very sturdy. And I think actually behind, I haven't written this yet actually, so Alphabet Scoop listeners exclusive, I guess, which is, you know, not saying much. But, you know, the device, apparently this new one, this EE2, was, I think, more intended to be a revision for that and the other things that came along with that, which included, you know, a new system on a chip, you know, the new battery, added RAM, some other things. I think those were actually secondary to making the device. I think this was mostly a revision, and it's something we wouldn't know unless we actually used it. I think primarily what they were working on was trying to minimize heat and longevity of the battery. not just longevity of the battery life, but longevity of the battery itself. Because that's another thing. These devices are being used 12 hours or whatever for like long shifts, day in and day out, exposed to the elements. And so, you know, the device itself would break down quicker than the average device. And if you remember, the Glass Explorer Edition also itself was not super durable. So the first EE just was kind of like flawed in a lot of ways. And I think that's what they were trying to fix with this. I think they were trying to make it keep the same form factor, obviously, which they did. But, you know, make it more, you know, acceptable for these kind of rougher environments. And along with that, seemingly probably better performance. And another interesting thing that we learned this week. So the FCC filing for this device went up, I think, a few months ago, which revealed was kind of the first reveal of the fact that, you know, it exists for sure. It has A4RGG2. That's its FCC ID. And then we saw a Geekbench leak, which was basically all the specs. And then to yesterday, or I think, was it yesterday or the day before? I don't remember. We saw these photos of the device for the first time. So these came from, I think, and I'm not 100% sure, because I was having a hard time translating this article, but they came from a non-US equivalent.
Yep.
To the FCC. Which country was it? Do we know?
Brazil.
Okay. So it was Brazil's FCC, basically. That's where these photos came from. And the FCC's photos, the external images for this device, are coming public in May, I think. But yes, these devices showed for the first time, on the back of the device that it has USB-C now. So for the first Explorer Edition and the Enterprise Edition, they both had this like weird magnetic cable attachment.
The original Explorer was a micro USB.
Oh, that's right. So it was micro USB on the bottom, and then it was the clip on the bottom, and now it's USB-C on the back. So, yeah, apparently the magnetic clip thing just didn't work out for... I mean, I'm sure that they're making all of these decisions based on their firsthand experiences actually using these devices in the field. And that makes sense. I mean, USB-C chargers are ubiquitous, and I'm sure at some point it became serious pain. I mean, that's another thing with this device, is that used in the enterprise, you know, they would have to be replacing these proprietary cables all the time, if you think about it. And so it makes a lot of sense that they would move to something that is a universal standard, because these companies can buy, you know, USB-C chargers and cables and docks and, you know, entire carts to store these glasses. If they have like 50 pair, 100 pair, it makes total sense for them to use a universal standard. So anyways, that's what we learned about Glass this week. It'll probably be a while before we hear more about this. And honestly, it doesn't really matter to anyone except for those that are in the enterprise actually using it on a daily basis. So, because it's still like $1,500 for the solution purchased from any of the vendors.
So like $1,500 as an enterprise solution. I guess that's fine for those companies. But I do, well, right now, Glass, the enterprise edition of Glass, is under X, the Moonshot Factory, and it's entirely focused on enterprise customers. I guess my question increasingly is with Magic Leap and HoloLens 2, which Microsoft is pushing exclusively at the enterprise, is a small heads-up display really that powerful thing? Like, how long is Glass, even in enterprise form, going to remain competitive when there are more advanced use cases of overlaying information and providing such more much more utility to these enterprise customers who are willing to spend that money to optimize the workforce? So,
yeah, I think it's both. I think there's room in the market for both. I think there are many cases where HoloLens would be a little bit bulky and a little bit in the way of the job that you're trying to perform. And so I think that Glass serves this market of people who, or, you know, companies that need these devices for
heads up displays,
but like it needs to, one, not get in the way, and two, it needs to, you know, like what, you know, physically like get in the way, but also I think that a lot of this manual work that's being done in factories, like you can't have anything that's covering your field of vision. I think HoloLens, it's obviously transparent, but I still think that obstructs your field of vision more than glass does. I just think it's kind of more of an accessory and less, you know, it's like glass is a helpful, it's basically a smartphone on your smartphone. It kind of,
maybe smartwatch is a better.
Yeah. Maybe. Yeah. It's actually, that's probably actually a better comparison. It's like, you know, it's like having that little bit of heads up information to help you be aware of, you know, what the task is that you're needing to do versus using the AR to do the task. Like I can see these HoloLens glasses being used like actually to like guide every single action and every single thing you do in minute detail. And I think glass is more of just like having a smartwatch on your face so that you know the time without having to have your phone on you, and you can, you know, like you have both hands being able to freeze, or you have both hands free. You know, it's basically being able to have your hands free and still be able to check some things. You know, it's like having a smartphone, but on the warehouse floor. And it would be obviously having to pull your smartphone in and out of your pocket like every 10 minutes would get in the way. And I feel like this solves that problem. So it's kind of like halfway. It's not all in on, like, you know, being a real, like, I don't know, significant AR solution. It's just kind of, I would say smartwatch on your face is pretty good comparison.
Yeah. I don't know, looking at this Enterprise Edition 2 stuff, I still want it. I mean, I would, okay, so Focus by North. They're basically doing that, but with a much more advanced projector technology. If an Intel Vant had something like that, it's really. I wonder if Google, how much actual R&D effort Google's X factory is putting into glass right now. Are they just finding a commercial use for existing technology, or are they actually iterating at the but even like a something like what Intel and Focals are doing with this basic heads-up technology that isn't really true augmented reality?
I think that they're solely focused on meeting the needs of their enterprise clients. Like, I think,
yeah,
and I think it's been, yeah, I think it's been really lucrative, and I think that it's helped. I think that it's helped pay back the millions and millions of investment that they made that ended up going to waste marketing glass to the masses.
Yeah, that's true. I'm a minority in this regard. But
as far as I've heard, the original spend on Explorer Edition was in the hundreds of millions, which is like, that's nuts. So yeah, I mean, I think that's what they're doing, is I think that they're trying to recoup some of that money.
Yeah, those scrapped barges, they're still paying off. Maybe they're still paying off for those barges. Oh, remember that speculation? The speculation around that was wild.
Yeah, I mean, I think it was a real thing. I think it was actually going to happen. And
oh, I would love to see those plans, I'm sure, of what that space is going to look like.
That sucks to know that those internal documents about what those would have, like early planning on what those were going to be. It sucks to know those internal documents exist and they're never going to see the light of day.
Okay, so the form factor and the original form factor for glass and like the advertising angle was obviously bad. You looked like a glass hole. But depending on how successful Focals are, isn't it like somewhat validating the original idea of glass, of having like a heads up display in your line of sight,
is what validating like Focals,
and Intel Vant and that kind of stuff.
Well, one thing to keep in mind is that Intel Vant is Focals now, basically.
Yes, patents were sold,
but yeah, I think I don't know. Yes and no. Yes, in the sense that, you know, obviously these companies are making an effort, and I think that they do appeal to some people. And like I wrote after CES, I think that Fogels are the closest thing we've seen to kind of making that original Glass Vision reality. But no, in the sense of, well, I think no in a few different ways. One way being, I don't know if that's really what people, where we're going to end up. Like, I'm not 100% sold that AR is going to win out over VR. As surprising as that may sound, I think AR is going to have a hard time in this next 5 to 10 years, where people are now starting to push back on screens, not embrace them more. I think mm-hmm. I think that the trend seemed to be, you know, like, it's kind of like the, you know, like the evolution kind of monkey standing up thing, where it's like we saw screens get closer, smaller, more intimate, and to our built-in IO, our eyes and our ears and our mouth, you know, like slowly over the last, you know, with the mobile revolution, we saw devices get closer to being directly integrated into human, like, IO. But I think that in the last, like, year or two, we started to see, as the smartphone has peaked, like, a little bit of pushback on it. And I think that I don't know if we're actually going to get closer to being, like, at least in the near term. I don't think it's, like, my initial viewpoint on Glass was it was just natural. Like, Glass was the natural next thing. Like, it's just the natural evolution of the smartphone. Mm-hmm. And I guess what I'm saying is, I don't know if I see that being the case anymore. And actually, I've started to think about VR as being more important, or at least potentially more more revolutionary in the way we interact with computers, for one reason, and that is that VR can be used by anyone anywhere in the world. It can be used by all 7 billion people in the world, almost 8 billion. Mm-hmm. AR can only be used by those that actually have some interesting visuals around them that the AR can use to process, to overlay interesting information, which is relatively speaking, I mean, that's under a billion, right? Like, the VR is, like, usable by 8 billion, and that the number of people that live in, I guess, I mean, it's basically how many people live in urban areas. That's basically what it boils down to. It's like, it's not 8 billion. And so, I don't know. I mean, and I think, you know, it's another thing. It was like, you know, thinking about Google's, like, you know, tagline and vision for the next billion users and stuff like that. I feel like for those people, I'm thinking about, you know, not as much. I mean, when Google says the next billion, they're mostly talking about, I think, India and some. But I'm thinking, like, you know, third world countries, like, you know, like African nations. I think that VR is going to be far more significant to them in the short term than AR will be. Anyways, that's just one reason that I think I've started to kind of buy into this idea that VR is going to be a bigger deal, even though to me, it seems like VR is stagnated. Like from an American consumer standpoint, VR seems to kind of, like, have, like, stagnated, and, like, it seemed like it was a really hot buzzword in tech for a while, but lately it seemed to kind of, like, I don't know, be put on the back burner, at least it seems. But anyways, that's what I'm saying, is I think with Glass, it seemed like a natural evolution to me, and now it seems like, I don't know if that's where we're going. I don't know if AR glasses are where we're going. And for that reason, I don't know if Focals really do validate the idea, especially given that Focals, I mean, they just laid off 50% of their staff, and it doesn't look good for them. So, yeah, the numbers don't lie. And I'm more and more, I think, being convinced that these AR glasses that we're thinking about are farther off than we think, if they even do become... I don't know. I think one thing too is, I think with smartwatches, they were also seen as, like, smartwatches will be the natural progression of the smartphone, and that they will, for many people, replace smartphones, or for some people, replace smartphones. I think that's kind of how some people saw it. Maybe the smart ones didn't, but, like, I think that so far, even with the Apple Watch being as good as it is, we've only seen the smartwatch be an accessory to the smartphone, and the smartphone has remained, I think, the centerpiece. And I think that that will remain the case with these AR glasses. I think that AR, I think that's what's going to happen is, I think, honestly, unfortunately, I think that Apple will probably be the first one to release something that's like at the intersection of fashionable and useful. I don't trust Google at this point to release something that's actually a good consumer product in this space. I wish they would. But I feel like Apple's going to use everything they learned from the Apple Watch, and they're going to crank out a really good pair of smart glasses. And I think that they're going to be an iPhone accessory primarily.
As enthusiastic as I am for the augmented reality and thinking that it can replace a smartphone, that is still one day much further down the future. I think what we're going to see in the more immediate future is the idea of AR in parentheses being something that can show, that can overlay simple notifications on your display that are contextually aware. Like, take Google Assistant. Like, on your phone, sometimes Google Assistant will send you notifications if you're near something or updates about the weather. It is still a hassle. Like, on Android, Assistant notifications and Google App notifications are, for the most part, low priority. They don't even get an icon near status bar. But if everybody's always wearing something and it's a much more unobtrusive experience of getting information to you, I think the idea that people would be more receptive to getting small doses of ambient notifications that could be relevant to your current place. So what I'm hoping to see in the near term is everybody getting in on this technology where you can show something very small in your line of sight. And maybe that, like with the smartwatch model, it get licensed to various sunglass manufacturers and whatnot. But I think there's something there in the short term, like the bridge before we get to full augmented reality glasses and that far vision in the future, is something that looks much more like the smartwatch. And a smartwatch isn't for everyone, but there are so many industries that can benefit from that. Being able to get new information to you without having to pull out your phone all the time. The social stigma of glass, of this bulky object, is hidden. You don't have to deal with it when the form factor and the technology ultimately gets small enough. So
yeah, I think the reason I'm bearish on this now is I think there's one area. And maybe this is just because I've personally experienced it probably more than most people, but I think that it's strongly underemphasized and I think just not talked about enough about the mental health implications of technology just broadly. But I think that specifically applies more the closer that technology gets to your brain and your natural input output. I think the more or the easier it is for it to have implications.
Definitely.
For your mental health. And I think that with the phone, you know, with the smartphone, here we are, you know, over 10 years later since the smartphone revolution really happened. We're only just now kind of like starting to realize some of, like, I mean, you're talking about notifications, man. Like,
yeah,
notifications are like the center of this kind of conversation about anxiety connected to smartphone use.
Absolutely.
And I just think that it's not, I think that people don't take that enough into account when it comes to thinking about smart glasses and smart watches with constant streams of notifications in your eyeballs all the time. Like, I think that, I guess that's really the root of why I'm bearish on this, is that I think that at some point, I mean, this is kind of like, I guess this is the metaphor I'll use, is like, you know, if you use your phone too much, has this ever happened to you where you use your phone so much that your thumb actually starts hurting? Like, okay, well, maybe, I mean, this is a thing that happens.
I have something. I have an equivalent.
I mean,
that
people, what's your equivalent?
I hear phantom notification sounds from Slack.
Okay. Yeah, like, that's
a good
example.
I hear it everywhere.
That's a good example. I mean, I see people talking about, like, literally, I use my phone so many hours out of the day that it causes my thumb to be sore. Like, what that is, like, the metaphor I'm describing here is that is your biology pushing back on something. Like, it's your biology sending a signal to your brain saying, no, this is not good for you. And I think that we're seeing that happen more and more with phones in general. And I think that I would guess if we all had these magical AR glasses, the ones that we've been thinking about since the launch of Google Glass in 2013, I think that those biological warning signs that say that's probably not good for you are going to be more apparent than ever. Like if Apple has a pair of AR glasses in their R&D labs right now, and they're actually having engineers wear them for 12 hours out of the day every day, I would guess that there are some biological kind of warnings being thrown that would say that this product, at least in the form that we've envisioned it since Google Glass version 1, is probably not, I mean, even if it does come, it's probably not going to be as appealing to people, I think, as we think. And maybe it won't come as soon as we think it will because there are...
of this backlash and the technology.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah, I think that's where my thoughts on AR have been stewing for the last like year or so. And I think the watch kind of skirts a lot of these concerns because it's like your phone, it's still at least 5 feet away from your head and you can ignore it if you want to. I don't know. What's your thought?
So when the thing that comes to mind right now is when Sergey Brin and company announced Google Glass, I'm sure you'll remember this better than I do, but the one tagline they were pushing was, you would use your smartphone less. It would be the replacement, but you would use your smartphone less because the interaction would be so brief that glass could deliver these short bursts of information that they don't seem as disruptive as pulling out your phone. I think there is something there that the early team behind Glass saw something there in that it comes alive. That it comes alive in those seconds. It's not constantly alive. You're not constantly getting an overlay, but rather you get these micro interactions throughout the day that help reduce you having to look at your phone. And I'm not sure the right balance of that is. Maybe we'll need to turn to AI to prioritize what is important to you and when to light up your screen. But I think there's some truth to the idea of being able to see snippets of information so you don't have to use your phone so often.
Yeah.
Like the key is being able to tone down these notifications, these interactions to prioritize. And maybe we have, like going into the future, that's the missing piece we'll be getting for smartphones as well. Having an assistant prioritize what alerts you. So maybe that's the missing the thing that we've been missing all these years.
Yeah, I guess my pushback on that is I honestly think it's too optimistic. And
yes, the technology is not there yet.
I mean, if you think about it's like the difference between, I mean, notifications and their ephemeralness or their, I guess, you know, permanence and like ongoing recurrence in our daily, you know, like life is more and more as technology has evolved over the last 20 years, you know, like with the desktop computer, those existed, you know, those notifications existed when you were on gmail.com and I got a new email, you know, or you got mail, like that was the notification of that day. And with mobile, you know, it's gotten to the point where it's like, you know, we're getting streams of notifications from all of our apps all day, every day.
Yes.
But at the same time, similar to the desktop, we're able to put our phone down and walk away from it. And we can, if we want to, we can leave our phone in a different room and we can be separate from our device, right?
Yes.
The problem with AR glasses, specifically talking about AR glasses and in the context of notifications, is that you can't do that. They're streaming all the time, and you don't have any way to not get that dopamine hit, really.
Especially if you need those glasses, it's the assistive glasses, if they collect your vision. You can't not wear it.
Yeah.
And it'll be stupid to like bring two pairs of it makes sense with sunglasses, is what I'm saying.
Maybe
for
I'm
people
wrong.
People that don't need it.
Maybe I'm wrong, but I think that what they were describing when they announced Glass, this idea that you can just get notifications all the time, and that way you can have these little 1 second interactions, and that way you won't have to spend extended time on your phone. I think that, maybe I'm wrong, but I think that those little ongoing 20 an hour, maybe 20, you know, every few hours, little bursts of notification, I think those honestly are the culprit. I think those are the culprit in terms of what is affecting our brain chemistry so much. I'm not a biologist. I'm not, you know, I don't know. I'm just literally making this up, honestly. But that's
you and I are living it.
I'm, so yeah, we do have some experience. This is my experience that I don't know. I mean, I don't know if replacing a phone with a smartwatch and getting those all those notifications on your smartwatch is any better in terms of the mental health implications, if that makes sense. Anyways, I think we've ranted about this long enough.
Yeah,
we've had our little discussion. Google Glass AR session.
Our hit, if you will.
Yes, our hit. And I'm sure we'll have many, many more in the future. Speaking of the future, Google I.O. 2019 is coming up. We don't expect any AR or at least Google Glass related news. We probably will see some AR news, actually. We don't know
phone
what.
Phone AR.
I wouldn't be surprised if Google Maps AR launches at Google I.O. for the public. We'll see.
Good venue.
But anyways, Google began notifying winners of its I.O. 2019 ticket drawing this week. A lot of people won and a lot of people didn't. So congratulations to those that did get a ticket, and hopefully we'll see you there. If you're watching the show or listening to the show and you did get a ticket and you're going, let us know. Send us an email or send us a DM on Twitter and we'll, you know, try and hook up with you and maybe chat a little bit. Also, we learned this week that event will be a no parking event. So that's going to be really annoying, as a couple of people who, I mean, last year we had the luxury of driving around a Tesla Model 3, and that unfortunately won't be the case this year.
We had to experience the mad rush of getting a Lyft. We know how bad it can get. Don't worry.
For sure. So anyways, that's the I.O. 2019 news that's coming up.
Quickly.
We'll probably be getting our tickets and booking our flights pretty soon here. Next week I'll be out on vacation. I'm going to the Grand Canyon / Zion National Park. So I don't know what's going to happen with the show. We may or may not have a show depending on how busy and crazy things are. Potentially next Wednesday, we don't know, but potentially developer preview 1 of Android Q could drop, which would mean we should have the show, but it would mean we probably don't because we'll be so busy. But there will be a lot to talk about next week. Hopefully,
there'll be a lot to read.
Yes. So if there's no show next week, we'll be back the week after for sure. We'll definitely be back the week after. I will be at GDC the week after too. So we've got a couple of busy weeks coming up here for the 9 to 5 Google side of things, and we're excited. And until next week, you can tune in to Alphabet Scoop here every week, record this podcast every Wednesday and publish every Thursday morning. And you can find us on all your favorite podcasting platforms such as iTunes and Apple Podcasts, Pocket Casts, Google Podcasts, Google Play, and you can also listen over at 9to5google.com. Thanks for tuning in as always. And as always, thanks to Abner for joining me, and we'll see you in a couple weeks.
Bye.